Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Gomel, Russia. Both of his parents were deaf, and he became a borderline juvenile delinquent. He emigrated to America in 1992 at the age of 20 and became a convicted felon. Since 1992, he's been a master hairstylist and barber, and since 2011, he's been the owner and founder of Aria Salon, which offers exceptional customer service along with modern hairdressing for men and women. His name, Dmitry Pomagalov. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dmitry Pomagalov. Dmitry, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thank you.
You grew up in Russia.
Correct.
Let's start by talking about your childhood and your parents, please.
I grew up in a working family. I have a mother and a father who are both deaf. My mother was born deaf. My father was born as a fully functional child. However, when he was maybe 1 year old, he contracted spinal meningitis and lost his hearing. I also had a brother who was 4 years younger than me.
You had a tough childhood. Your dad was an alcoholic, both parents deaf. Talk about your young years.
I don't believe my father got over the fact that he became deaf. Somehow he felt like the God gave him a short end of the stick. And he was drinking a lot, and he was a violent drunk. I believe my father is a coward because he would not pick anybody his own size. So he came home and he got his aggression on everybody at home, which is my mother, myself, and my brother. I think I was 7, 8 years old, and I would have to wait for my father to come in. That could be 2 o'clock in the morning, 3 o'clock in the morning, but he can't sleep because you don't know what's happening. And if he's really violent, my mother will stand in his way, and I would have to dress my brother, and we would have to go to my grandma, who lived across the town. And it's an interesting childhood when you have to make executive decisions at age 7.
What was it like growing up where both of the parents are deaf?
It's a unique upbringing. There was a book I once read called Hands of My Father. I never believed that I always felt different. I always wanted to have parents just like everybody else. I always wanted to come home and for somebody ask me, how was your day? How does it make you feel? You know, things of that nature. I never had that in my life. There is a limitation in the communication with people who are deaf. You have to express your emotions in sign language, which is not that easy. And what makes it more complicated, emotions were not safe in an alcoholic family. You don't say, you don't speak, you don't tell. Alcoholism is a disease of his secrets. It's a shame-based disease.
You said at age 7 or 8 you were expected to make executive decisions. You were also expected to raise the parents.
Yeah. We take for granted a lot of things, just the ability to make a phone call or talk and hear. in the people that live in a deaf world, some of those, I mean, all of those things are luxuries. The technology came a long way, where everybody has a cell phone and FaceTime, and deaf people have so much more way to communicate with the world. When I was growing up, none of it was possible. I had to, let's say, my father had to go to the doctor, and I would be the interpreter to the doctor. So at 7 or 8, I was expected to be adult. When you walk into a new office, I had to be an adult because I had to translate from one end to another. It's a hard way to raise your parents.
At age 11, you contemplate suicide.
Yeah. You know, my father made me believe that everything that was wrong in my family, it was my fault. And he would tell me that. And kind of, you know, I'm a child and messes up with my mind. So eventually I figured out, because it's my fault, that things will go away if I kill myself. Nothing happened. I mean, I'm still here.
At age 15, you seriously contemplated homicide.
Yeah. Then I grew a little bit older. Then I figured out it wasn't my fault. It was my father's fault. So if my father goes away, all the problems in my family will go away. So when I was that age, I knew how I'm going to kill my father, what I'm going to kill him with. I knew where I'm going to dispose his body, and I had an alibi. That's a hell of a childhood. My father is still alive, in spite of himself. And I thank God nothing happened.
You were then introduced to alcohol, and I quote you, and I was good at it.
Yeah. My old man always said that I'm never going to be anything. I'm not good at anything. I'm not going to be anything. I'm just going to be whatever. And around 14 or 15, I was introduced to alcohol, and I quickly figured out that I'm good at it. I'm very good at consuming large quantities of alcohol without being a liability. And I actually pride myself on it.
We're talking to Dmitry Pomogalov, who today owns a very high-end Aria salon in Grosse Pointe Woods. Amazing story. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Krasula, and we're with Dmitry Pomogalov. Both of his parents were deaf, and you then become a borderline juvenile delinquent, and you get thrown in a clinker in Russia. What's it like being in the clinker in Russia?
And now, nowadays, everybody's have a diagnosis for everything. You ADD, or you OCD, or you HD, or whatever. When I was growing up, it was not so much. It was, you were a good child, or you were a bad child. I didn't have encouragement at home. So it was easier to be a bad child, so I was. Petty crimes, theft, vandalism, I didn't spend a lot of time in jail in Russia, but cops have an interesting way of doing things. When I came to this country, it was 1992. It was everything was about police brutality, and it was comical to me because nobody ever seen police brutality. Cops will hit you on the kidneys with the soft rubber sticks. Doesn't leave any external marks. The bruising actually happens on the inside. Sadistic bastards. And there's nowhere you can go. There is no lawyers. You can't sue nobody. It is police brutality in the pure form of it.
At 18, it was mandatory that you serve 2 years in the Red Army from 90 to 92. And then, on June 11th, 1992, you come to America to Oak Park, Michigan. What do you remember about the first week being in Oak Park, Michigan?
It was surreal. I remember in the morning I walked outside and there was a bicycle outside just standing there. And I was shocked. I was floored. Nobody stole that bicycle. I think the biggest problem, the biggest difference I've seen, I came from an urban environment and everybody walked everywhere. Everybody knew everybody. It was a part of a survival thing. And nobody walked. Everybody drove. Nobody talked to anybody. It's kind of a almost secluded, lonely existence. The weirdest thing for me was everybody was looking you in the eye and smiling. Where I came from, that was not really a smart thing to do.
What was it like the first time you walked into a grocery store, Dimitri?
So, when I came to the United States, I spoke no English whatsoever. No hi, no bye, no anything. And like I mentioned, everybody walked, and if you get from point A to point B, you got to walk pretty quick. So, it says in the door in the grocery store, I remember it was A&P grocery store at the time, it says, caution, automatic door. I can't read. I bump into the door one time. Then you walk into the grocery store, and I just want milk, just a milk. There's a whole milk, 2%, 0.5%, fat-free. Almond milk, which is kind of an odd concept to me because you can't milk almond. So effectively, it's an almond juice. And so on and so forth. Bread that doesn't spoil for 3 months. Odd things. Too much of the things that I couldn't understand.
How did you ever learn English?
Well, I would say I have a inquisitive mind and kind of a no fear. Also, as a human being, you learn to adapt. So nobody spoke Russian anymore, and I understood that I have to speak English. Otherwise, it's just like being a handicapped, like not have a leg, or being deaf, or. So I learned English by communicating with people as much as possible. Basically learning on the street and watching TV.
You then went to a beauty school.
Yeah.
Why?
I started dating a young woman. Probably dating would be a stretch. But she was in beauty school to be a nail tech. So she said to me, and I wasn't going anywhere. I didn't know what I want to do. And she said that you should be a hairdresser. I said, how come? She said that women in America love a male hairdresser that has an accent. I thought it was weird. You know, I was 20 years old. What do I know? So I said, whatever. I mean, I always knew I'm good with my hands and I can be good with people if I have to be. So I enrolled in school. She enrolled me in, and in retrospect, she just did it to keep an eye on me. I mean, mistake on her part. I walked in into beauty school and there were all women in there. And I just said to myself, I arrived. This is going to be a lot of fun.
You then sell a broken down Pontiac for $25. And what do you do with those proceeds?
Yeah, My uncle gave me my first car in America was a Pontiac T1000. Rare piece of crap. And eventually it broke down in the parking lot of a beauty school. I call it a junkyard. And a guy came in and gave me $25. And with that $25, I bought my first pair of clippers. Because I remember a story my grandma said, when her and grandpa got married, my grandpa was a tailor. With the first money that he had, they had no furniture, but he bought a sewing machine because he knew he can make money doing so. And I bought my clippers.
I quote you now. By the time I was 21, I felt like I was 50.
Yeah. It's a hard job to raise your parents. When one minute you expect it to be adult, and then the next minute you expect it to be a child. Trying to protect my mother and trying to protect my brother from a violent father, I don't think it's a right way to grow up. So by the time I was 21, I really, really feel like I was 50. I was really, really tired. To live that way.
At 21, you were introduced to something else, and I quote you, "It was magic. It gave me everything I was looking for, and it was heroin."
Yeah. I was good at drinking. You know, people drink for different things. I watch people opening up a bottle of wine and smelling a cork and pouring a little bit in the glass and then sniffing it, and it's saying, ooh, it has a hint of leather. I'm thinking, how is it a hint of leather in a wine? All I wanted to get as much as possible in me as fast as possible, so I don't have to feel whatever I feel at this point. And alcohol wasn't doing it fast enough for me. I was introduced to heroin. And that's when I understood that this is how I want to feel for the rest of my life. And I did anything possible to feel that way.
It made you feel great quickly, but also it made you broke quickly because very expensive habit, $150 a day.
Yes, it's $150 a day. And I'm going to quote Axl Rose from Guns N' Roses. He had a song called Mr. Brownstone. And it goes something like this. And I did a little, and a little won't do it. And a little became more and more. Where it starts with a really cheap habit becomes very expensive. $150, it's not to get high. $150 is not to get sick on a daily basis. It's a full-time job with no retirement benefits.
We're talking to Dmitry Pomagalov, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula, and we're with Dmitry Pomagalov. Dmitry, you're working at a salon in Hudson's in Oakland Mall, and you steal some coats to get that $150 a day. What happens?
I was working in a hair salon in Hudson's, and to support my heroin habit is expensive. So everything, all the mind power goes into how to obtain money, to how to obtain drugs, because I don't want to get sick. I end up taking some merchandise and I was arrested. I was arrested by Oakland County. I spent time in Rochester City Jail, and then I was transferred to the Oakland County Jail because of it was a felony. It's a larceny from the building, And I spent, I think, almost 4 weeks in Oakland County awaiting my trial.
You're a convicted felon, and then God sends you to Jefferson House that the Capuchins run, and you were there for 9 months. What happened?
You know, people want to win the lottery. I mean, I probably want to win the lottery too, but I don't play. If in 1999 I won a physical lottery, I'd probably be dead really quickly. Me being a Jefferson House and a Capuchin monastery, I looked at it as a winning the God's lottery. It's a facility that houses 12 men, and I was, English is my second language. I learned a new word for myself, and the word is indigent. It's not poor or broke, because if you're poor or broke, you still have something. When you're indigent, you're lacking basic human needs. And I was indigent at that point. I did not own socks or underwear. I had nowhere to go, and nobody wanted me. But these people took me in, and this was the start of my new life. Basically, some kind of a metamorphosis.
What kind of jobs did you do there those 9 months?
I mean, obviously, the emphasis of being in Jefferson House is to work on self and the recovery program, and look into your demons and figure out why do I have to take drugs? What do I not want to feel? But, you know, also we worked. We worked at the warehouse. We worked at the soup kitchen. We did some odd things in a neighborhood for neighbors. It was one of the most difficult and beautiful parts of my life. But being at the Jefferson House, working there, I was able to pay off my probation and the restitution to the state of Michigan. I was able to save a little bit of money to put a down payment in my first apartment. First and foremost is I've learned how to be a human again.
You said a couple minutes ago that the Capuchins are God's lottery. Tell us about the Capuchins.
I'm not religious. I was not a religious person. I grew up in a country where the God was not legal, basically. So it was funny. I've learned that you can pray. You can bargain with God. Later, I witnessed things like people praying, oh, God, let me out of there. If you get me out of here, I'll do this or do that. I never knew there was an option. So I knew I screw up, and this is the consequences of my actions. But Capuchin Monastery, I mean, I still don't believe in organized religion. I do believe there is a power greater than myself out there. But this organization is pretty unique, and it's a beautiful thing. Everything they do it back for a community. They feed people, they clothe people. I mean, they serve the people, the indigent, the unwanted, the less fortunate, and I'm forever grateful for that.
If you want to learn more about the Capuchins, www.csgdetroit.org. CSGDetroit.org. I quote you one more, Dimitri. They love us till we learn how to love ourselves.
Yeah. Person that really likes themselves or feel that they're worthy of something, they don't need to do heroin or drink too much. And as I mentioned before, they taught us how to be human. We came here. One of the benefactors donated a season tickets to the Fisher Theater. And we came here to see several plays. The love that was given, I mean, sometimes it was a tough love, but people like me sometimes need a tough love. And slowly, I became a human.
Speaking of love, you're 28, and you meet a 19-year-old Georgia. 13 years later, you marry her.
Yeah, I when I completed Jefferson House, I needed to get a job, and I didn't want to go back to the salons in Royal Oak or Birmingham. And somebody said, "Why don't you go to Grosse Pointe?" And I said, "What's Grosse Pointe? I mean, there's nothing really fun in Grosse Pointe for a 20-some-year-old." But I went, and I walked in a salon that I liked, and I applied for a job. And there was a young woman working there as a receptionist. Well, she was in school. Her name was Georgia. And we became good friends. And we stayed as friends for a long time. And something clicked. And now we're married.
And you have a beautiful young son.
Yeah. Yeah. We have a beautiful boy who is 4 years old right now. And he's the love of my life.
All right, since 2011, you've been the owner and founder of Aria Salon, Grosse Pointe Woods. With that track record, how did you ever get your own salon?
I was fishing in a Pier Marquette River, and while I was standing there and fly fishing, something came in my mind. I said, I need to go to college. I went to college. I walked into Macomb Community and enrolled, passed the placement test, and I took some classes. I took classes for a little over 2 years, and then I got kind of tired, and I took a semester off. Then a few days later, I got bored, and I said, how do I figure out what did I learn and how would I utilize all of it in one kind of a project? And I start writing a business plan. After doing all of the primary, secondary, all the numbers, I looked at it, and the numbers make sense. In 2011, in the worst possible economy in its Michigan, I saw the numbers said that I can do this. And I didn't buy existing business. It was a startup. And everybody said that I was crazy. And I probably was. But that's what makes an America. You take a risk. You have a vision. You work hard. And with a little bit of good luck, you might actually make it. Now, 7.5 years later, we're still here and we're doing great. We're growing every year about 8%. And for a poor Russian immigrant, it's not so bad.
We're talking to Dmitry Pomagalov. When we come back, we're going to ask him about Aria Salon. And I'm Jack Rasul, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasul. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to Dmitry Pomagalov. Raised by deaf parents, been in the clinker in Russia, been in the clinker in America, and since 2011, he's the owner and founder of Aria Salon, Grosse Pointe Woods. If you want to learn more, www.ariasalongp.com. Dmitry. Oftentimes, You know more about the beliefs and the emotions of your clients than some of their own family members do. How does that happen?
I think the bartenders and the hairdressers have the same thing going. People open up to bartender because they're drunk. And part of my job is a communication, verbal communication, but there is also a physical communication. Sometimes I'm the only person that would touch that person. There's a lot of lonely people. There is people that depressed. Sometimes they lack in things, and I don't know when somebody touching you, and it's safe and it's good. People have tendency to open up.
You've done this for 26 years.
Yes.
What's the biggest thing you've learned from those people in the chair for 26 years?
It's hard to say what I've learned the biggest. I'm still learning. I think when I was 20, I thought I knew everything. And now I'm gonna be 47. And now I understand that I really don't understand. So the longer I live, the more I understand that I don't know much. So on a daily basis is a learning experience. And every person that I come in contact with, I learn more and more. I've learned that life is not what it looks like sometimes. I've learned that people that can look perfect and have a perfect so-called life have a lot of problems. And I've learned not to judge my insides by other people's outsides. Because it may appear as though the grass is greener over there, or somebody actually have a perfect life, but we all struggle. We all struggle. Life is difficult, and I learned to take things in perspective.
By your own admission, you've won the lottery. Beautiful family, hair salon, Grosse Pointe Woods, very successful. The first few segments of the show, the listeners had to be thinking, wow, why you, Dimitri?
I was asking myself that question. Why am I still here? Why am I alive in spite of my own self? I lost my brother to drug overdose. Why is he dead and I'm still alive? What's so special about me? And I stopped asking that question. I'm grateful that I'm alive. I'm grateful that I still have half a brain to think and operate and I don't ask why. Today I just get up, I suit up, show up, and I try to be the best person that I can be throughout the day. And this is why I'm still alive.
If there's a listener tonight, Dimitri, that says, I crave it, whether it's the liquor, the drugs, the pills, Dimitri, I'm powerless to stop it. What do you say to that person?
So if I'm still alive by March 25th, I'll be 20 years sober. And it's one of the hardest things I've done in my life. There is a help out there. It's more open now than it ever been. There's a hotlines. There is every county has a Wayne County, Macomb County, Oakland County has a hotline. You can call AA hotline. There's a numerous treatment centers. There is meetings. There is what I want to say is you don't have to do this by yourself. There is a people out there, just like me, that are been in a tough spots, and with the help of each other, it's possible to stay sober.
Bill Wilson, many decades ago, wrote the 12 Steps, which has helped tens and tens, hundreds of millions of people. Talk to us about the brilliance of the 12 Steps.
The brilliance of a 12-step program is it's not supposed to work by if you think about as an organization, because it's self-run by a bunch of ex-drunks that and criminals and. But it works, and it works beautifully because it's a we program. It's not an I program. An alcoholic and drug addict helps another alcoholic or drug addict. And that's how it works. None of it works unless person admits that he or she has a problem. Your family may say you have a problem. Your Oakland County or Wayne County may say you have a problem. Employer may say you have a problem. However, if you don't think you have a problem, then you don't. But if you really do have a problem, then and you really, really want to do something about, there's a lot of help out there. And you can start a journey and a new life. It's a simple program for complicated people.
Dmitry Pomogalov, what a shining example of there's always hope. God's got a mission for everybody, and God's mercy. Keep up the great work. Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spall. Believe in yourself.